Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History, Be Strong, Stand Out, and Stand Up, with the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's what we're going to do this morning. We got some real glass kickers in the room, I think so.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've got a very interesting topic today. We've talked about so many things on the show over the course of the last year. And this one is about dating and logic. So this will be rather interesting. So we have a great guest. We have Judy Ladour with us, who was born in the heart of the Appalachia Mountains. And we were just talking because I was born in a little town called Wheeling West, by God, Virginia. And when you drive in and out of town, the signs actually say you are entering or leaving Wheeling West, by God, Virginia, and they mean it. My mom was the youngest of nine kids and a coal miner's daughter, and Judy has some similar backgrounds there, so we were kind of laughing about that. You know, it's been a great life for Judy. You know, early in her career, she had the entire world out there filled with opportunities for her to explore. She embraced fearless spirit, you know, from her parents and instilled them with anything was possible. She began a career with a trip to Chicago with a dream of being an actress. And I wonder how many people out there at some time thought they'd like to be an actor in some place. But she ended up being a waitress. So at 21, she launched her real estate career, and she quickly became the number one real estate agent at her firm and was eventually promoted to be director of recruiting and training for a large firm. But in 1990, she found herself divorced and out of a job. And determined to support her family, she launched a new career as a professional speaker. Like me, I'm a professional speaker. I love it. She rose to the top again, only to have that career shut down after 2 years. Quite a career of failing forward, I call it, always failing forward.
Right.
But today she started her company again, and she's number one in the company in terms of recruiting top sales agents. She helps agents excel in their field through what she calls the art of predictive behavior. And so we're going to talk about the art of predictive behavior and dating and logic and how that can help someone find their ideal mate. She's been featured on numerous TV shows, speaks in 16 countries, and was voted one of the top women in the real estate leadership. So, Judy, quite an interesting career there. Kind of had several careers.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, like I said, I started off with a dream of being on stage. And interestingly enough, I eventually did end up on stage, just not in the path that I planned. And but real estate's been an awesome opportunity for me. And, you know, something that Steve Jobs said is that you can never know where life's going to take you, but you can always look back and you can see at every turn and curve what we maybe perceived at that time to be disasters, or like, oh my gosh, the company's shutting down, what do I do? Really always opened up another avenue for us, and our life takes those turns. And so you can see that, you know, where I'm at today is because of everything that happened over the past and just accepting that that door had closed and moving on to a different path. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, I heard something from Joseph Campbell that said, "When one door opens and one door closes, two doors open for you." If
right.
you're aware and you keep your eyes out looking for those opportunities. So, how long have you been studying predictive behaviors and behavioral patterns, and sort of what created this interest?
Well, interestingly enough, I went to a training class in 1981, so it's been about 35 years ago. That was designed for real estate agents. At the time, I had been an agent for about 5 or 6 years. And the course just really made sense. The training basically said that each of the different behavior patterns make their decisions in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you're in sales or any sort of business where you work with people, understanding how they're going to make their decision just makes your job that much easier. So I thought, wow, you know what? I'm going to check that out. And interestingly enough, I think it was really one of the reasons I rose to the top in my sales career, which opened doors for me to go into management leadership. Once I got into management leadership, it allowed me to better understand the agents that I had under my, within our offices, how they made their decisions, why they respond the way that they do, how to keep 100 sales agents working together cohesively. And then once I launched my speaking career, you know, and as you mentioned, a couple of years into it, the company I was working for closed that division, but I just launched my own company at that point. And I'm now a recruitment specialist. I travel around the world helping brokers identify the right people for sales industries. And as it turns out, the number one thing that sets me apart from others and has really been that one defining thing that I do is I can help brokers identify who's going to be a good sales agent just by understanding behavior patterns.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I was doing a workshop yesterday for a group of women on my five ways to be an empowered woman leader. And the first one is about being strong and knowing what your strengths are. And so we talked about the concept of, that actually goes back to Plato, of people are born with a set of preferences for how they communicate, how they think, how they act, how they make decisions. And while that pattern may change a little bit to some extent, if you're allowed to be yourself, you will revert back to your natural pattern. It's sort of like most people were born either right-handed or left-handed. And while if you were in Catholic school in the old days and you were left-handed, they try and force you to go right-handed. Most people, if they had their natural preference, would always be one or the other. And you could learn to write with your opposite hand. So say you broke your right arm and you had to write with your left hand, you could do it. But as soon as you were able, you would go back to that natural pattern, and it has to do with you can watch people, you can observe people of how fast they talk, how do they hold their body, how close do they get to people, and probably one of the most important was how do they make decisions? Do they make decisions based on their heart or on their head, and all those kinds of things. So I guess it's kind of, I've been fascinated in this field as well, and I probably shouldn't say this because this is a core of some of the money that I make and how I make a part of my business. But a lot of times people call me in to do a simple half-day team building session or a one-day team building session. And I always do it around the strength profiles of, are you an introvert or an extrovert? Are you a thinker versus a feeler? Are you, you know, are you a dove, an eagle, or an owl? And we have some fun with it, but really it does come down to your natural patterns. So kind of with that, I guess, you know, a lot of people think, you know, we're attracted to our opposite for some reason. Why is that?
You know, I can only give you what I perceive it to be, or what I've done some research on. They actually really say that it's due to two things. The first theory is that, let's say, the daughter-father relationship or the mother-son relationship, you know, from the time we're born, we have a relationship, let's say as women, we have a relationship with a male figure in our life in many cases. Mm-hmm. And they do become kind of our hero or that role model, and we look at them as that person that keeps us safe and is going to take care of us. And so a lot of times the choice that we make is really just based on something maybe as familiar as, this person feels safe to me because they remind me of my father and they have really taken care of me. And sometimes that's the case, and that father, daughter, or son-mother relationship could be complete opposites, since so many couples are opposites. Your odds are 50% that person is going to be your opposite. But there's a theory out there that I think really makes a lot more sense for everyone, in that we look to replace something that's missing in our life. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I'm scattered, I'm all over the place, and I never save money, and I'm not detail-oriented, and I can't fix stuff, and I meet this guy who is calm and controlled and can fix things, and he's handy, and he's knows how to budget money and save and stuff, I just find myself thinking, oh, my gosh, I wish I could be like that. I need that in my life. And so what you need in the way of traits that perhaps, as you said, when Plato said you're born with a set of preferences, if that's not one of your preferences you were born with, yes, I can become organized and I can become stable and, you know, and rigid and whatever. But as soon as I relax, I will just go back to who I am.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard to stay in a pattern that's not your natural pattern for very long. So I think the answer that really just goes right across the board for everyone is that, you know, we look for what's missing in our life. And, you know, if you want, you know, if you wish you were stronger and could take control, maybe that's the person you look for. If you wish that you could just be more humble and kind, you know, that's really what you look for. So I think, you know, between one of those two, I think sometimes maybe that thing that we're looking for does appear in one of our parents. And then you've got kind of that double effect taking place.
And I guess what I've seen and experienced a lot of times is that people can move out to that opposite side. You know, they can do something that's mm-hmm. outside their comfort zone. But if you think of your energy as like a pie, and you've only got so much energy to give, and if you're not an organized, detail-oriented person, but your job requires that, especially like you and I, if we're speakers and trainers, mm-hmm. we've got to have our, right. you know, we've got to have everything organized. And so you put all your organization energy, all your precise energy, into work. When you get home, your life is in complete chaos because you just don't have more energy to give to those organization skills. Or I was telling the story yesterday about a friend of mine who was one of the top salespeople of Xerox for 10 years. And we're talking, you know, presidents, clubs, awards, made bukus of amounts of money in sales, was really successful. And after 10 years, he quit and bought a farm in Oregon. And we all looked at him and thought, you are flipping crazy. You know, why would you give up this life? You've got the fancy cars. You've got the big house. You've got the great job and the prestige. Why would you give all that up? And so he was a close friend. And finally, what he said to me was, I got tired of throwing up every day. I hated so much going out and having to be so extroverted in sales. And I was so outside my comfort zone that almost every day I would throw up before I went on a sales call. And that's working outside your preferences for sure.
Right. And I'll tell you, Patty, actually, that is really, really common. What I call that is most of us, or many of us, work in what's called our secondary trait. And even though we have a little bit of each of the four behavior traits in all of us, and just using maybe the DISC test, which a lot of people know right. quite well, you'd have a little D, a little I, a little S, a little C, but you're going to have two dominant traits for most people.
Yep.
And you work and live in your two dominant traits. So, for example, and your friend sounds like the prime example, in all my classes, I will ask people who are in a leadership role but have a passive, more support basic trait, but their secondary trait is the leadership trait.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask them, how does it feel when you go to work each day? And they say, you know, I'm completely relaxed until I get in the car, but just driving to work, I feel myself start to tense up.
Yep.
And I'm thinking to myself, I have to put myself into my secondary trait. And I hold myself there all day long. So I stay in that trait because it's necessary for the job. But as soon as I get in the car and I know I'm going home, then I can relax. So I think when people are working in their secondary traits, because maybe they didn't really, that they just picked something they thought would be good, those are the people, your friends and relatives, that often tell you, like, I hate my job, you know, I live for Friday. That just means they're not working, they're not utilizing their natural strengths and traits, which is so sad.
Yeah, and you mentioned DISC, so I want to describe that a little bit for people in the audience in case you don't know. There's things like the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. Mm-hmm. There's all these questionnaires. Right. There's, you know, insights, but one of the most popular ones is called DISC, and so it's D-I-S-C. You can actually go online. You can put in D-I-S-C. You'll come up with probably hundreds and thousands of sites that will say, you know, go click this link, and you can either take this DISC survey for free, or it might cost $25 or $50. But in essence, it's looking right. at people and their dominant traits. And I agree, most people have two dominant traits. I happen to be a dominant I, which means I'm very intuitive, creative, spontaneous, fun, you know, outgoing kind of thing. Normally, right. but under stress, I turn into D, which is a driver, which means, you know, bar the doors, Katie, get out of the way, I'm a tank.
Exactly.
So that's
my trait as well, Patty, so that's why you and I just clicked right away, because I'm the same high I, secondary D. But you said something interesting, Patty, in that under stress, that D really comes out.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, that D personality is so focused, and it's all about getting that task done, that when you shift into that logical trait from that fun-loving, outgoing, I personality into that D driver-focused, serious trait, people around you are like, whoa.
Yeah.
Watch out for Patty right now. And it's not that Patty's any different. It's just that Patty shifted into a different behavior trait maybe to get that task done because you can feel that pressure. And then you can shift right back into your I trait.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, from a relationship standpoint, it's kind of funny because, you know, it's usually when it's a pressure or deadline or I need to get something done. And so frequently if my husband's listening, my kids probably aren't listening, but sometimes they listen to the replays. And I've had my children and my husband say to me, we don't work for you.
Right. Well, it And on that same line, whenever I hire a new assistant to work with me, I always tell them, so this me you're going to really like, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to work together really well. I do want to let you know that whenever I'm under pressure, I'm going to turn into the driver.
Yeah.
And so your first reaction will be, I don't think I like this side of her. But I'm going to give you permission in our working relationship to say to me, okay, little Miss Driver. And that just tells me that my driver side's being really strong right now, and it's not that you're not comfortable with it. And it's funny because they'll say, oh, I'd never say that. I go, no, really, say it, because I don't even recognize it sometimes.
Yeah.
But you will. And so in our working relationship, I want you to break the ice and say, okay, little Miss Driver. And that just says, okay,
take a breath.
A little bit calmer. Yeah. Right, take a breath. Driver side showing.
I had a great guest on my show a couple of months ago, and she wrote a book called Grace versus Leadership with Grace and Grit. And I love this saying. This is so funny because she says once in a while her staff will say to her, did you leave Grace at home today? So maybe you can tell that to your staff. You can say, you know what, most times I'm going to be grace and fun and outgoing, but once in a while I'll turn into grit. And when I do, just say to me, where's Grace?
Yeah, that's right. Where's Grace? Oh, that's a book I'm definitely going to pick up. It sounds like an amazing book.
It's great. So from a relationship standpoint, you know, how do you use these predictive behaviors? Because it seems to me if someone's in a relationship, and I've seen this happen with a lot of friends, and I actually have a friend who lives in Pasadena who had a bad marriage. And then after she got out of the marriage, she kept picking these horrible men. I mean, horrible, horrible men. And at one point in time, she said to us, about three of us, that we were the friend patrol. So if she met a guy that she thought she liked, he had to pass the friend test. He had to meet each one of us individually, otherwise it would have been totally overwhelming. And we would give a thumbs up or thumbs down if she could keep dating this guy. So from that perspective, you know, sometimes when one relationship fails, why do we seem to choose the same personality with the next person?
Well, that is actually very easy to understand. And sometimes I use a different analogy for that. But I love the friend test. We all have the friend test when we get to the point where we're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I picking the wrong people over and over? The problem is all the people that they're going to present to you will still look the same. So you'll keep saying, no, I don't like that one either. It comes from a comfort zone. So even though, like, if you think about it, at one point the relationship was good, and there was something about that, again, a need in your life that attracted you to that person. Now, what happens, and I think, like, to me, my next life, I think the thing I would love to do is to really help people early on in their relationships understand who they're committed to and who they're in that relationship with, so they understand that other person a bit better. But let's just say that you have that total opposite, then there's going to be conflict, constant conflict throughout that relationship. And eventually you start saying things such as, like, why do you always have to do that? And because it's just who they are.
Yeah.
But then it gets bad. So when it gets bad, you think, I'm never going to go back to that again. But if you allow your emotions to dictate your choices, you will almost always revert back to that emotional need that you have. And that's why you pick the same people over and over. So the way that you break that pattern really is you use logic, not emotion. So and that's hard for a lot of people because, again, keep in mind that your friends are going to be attracted to a certain type of person because that's what they feel that they need in their life.
Yeah.
Even though long term that relationship isn't working well for them.
Well, what's interesting is that when you think about dating, you think about love. Right? You meet somebody and you fall in love with them and you love everything about them. And then when you get farther in the relationship, you find there are certain behaviors or tics or clicks or habits they have that literally drive you insane. And I think a mistake a lot of people make is they think, well, I'm going to change this person, right? This person who's been a habitual slob, whose car door doesn't open.
Right.
whose studio looks
people,
like...
People typically don't change.
I'm talking about Paul, my studio manager.
Oh.
I opened his trunk one time and there were like six vacuums in there. And it was stuffed with stuff. I mean, I know he has his organization.
I'm ready for anything here. What?
I think you could survive an earthquake, a hurricane, a flood. And any natural disaster. But I think people go in with the idea, well, I know he's not very neat. I'll just use that as an example. But, you know, I'm right. so in love that I will change that habit of not being right. neat. But the fact is they're...
30 years she's been trying. That's all I can tell you.
Right. But yeah, they're born... Again, once again, it's an emotion, right? I love this guy. Like, he's perfect. Except for these three things, but, you know, over the course of time, that'll change. It's not going
to
change.
They'll change themselves if they choose to, but they have to choose themselves. Right. You can't change them.
They have to choose it.
Yeah.
You know, the analogy I sometimes use, and it was a really sad situation, but I had a friend that was in a very, very abusive relationship, and she asked me one time to actually go with her to some counseling sessions. And in the counseling sessions, one of the things that came out was that the holidays, every year the holidays were the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And her spouse would get very drunk and very abusive. And what we discovered later was that that spouse grew up in that very abusive relationship. All the holidays were very abusive. Things were broken. It was awful. And here's what the counselor said, which I just... At first, I couldn't imagine it, but then it started to make sense. They said, for their comfort zone for a holiday is chaos and disruption. And so when it's mm-hmm. peaceful for that person, it feels wrong. So they'll actually, without even realizing it, create the chaos.
Yethey'll create the chaos.
To say, okay, this is how a holiday is supposed to feel. So you know, if you look at that, I think sometimes that's the same thing in a picking the same person over and over.
Yeah.
You might think, how could you pick that same person over and over? But for them, it goes back to, okay, this feels comfortable. This is what I remember my relationship originally felt like this. So here it is again. I got that same feeling again, but ultimately maybe the same disastrous outcome if they don't learn from that.
Right.
Which is actually how I ended up helping a friend of mine break out of that same pattern by using predictive behavior.
Yeah. So before we take a quick break, I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you. So if you could say your name, where they can contact you, at your website, your phone number, whatever you're comfortable giving out, and also please spell your name because it is beautiful but a bit different.
It absolutely is. The name is Judy Ladur. Ladur is spelled L-A-D as in David, E-U-R. My email is judy@judyladur.com. My website is judyladurinternational.com. And my phone number is 630-402-0898 at the office.
Okay, great. We're going to come back from break, and we're going to talk about those four predictive behaviors and get into more how can we help people find their ideal relationship through dating and logic.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
And now back to Patty and her guest.
So this is Patty Grimm. I'm with Judy Ladur, we're talking about dating and logic using predictive behaviors and understanding what those personality types or styles are. So, Judy, can you tell us more about the four different personality types? And if you could provide some examples from a dating perspective of how those types you might attract or whatever with those types. So what are the four different personality types within predictive behavior, and then maybe some examples as we go through?
Absolutely. Let's, again, just because I think a lot of people are familiar with it, we'll just use the DISC test for a moment. The DISC, being D-I-S-C, lays out four different behavior patterns. The D, which I actually call the driver personality, is the strongest of the four personalities. The second strongest or the most persuasive would be the I personality. I call that the expressive personality. After that, you've got a very analytical personality, which is quite cautious, a little stubborn. And then you've got your C or your S personality, which is very steady. It's called the support quadrant. So let's just, like with the D personality, the strongest one, some of the traits in the D personality, it's going to be their natural skills are being a leader, taking charge. Often you find the driver as the president of large companies. You'll find them in leadership positions. The D has it's right in their DNA. They have to be in charge of whatever it is that they do. So in many, many cases, the driver is an entrepreneur, owns their own business. So a driver will start their own business.
Mm-hmm.
A driver will be a doctor in charge of others' lives. They're an airline pilot in charge of keeping the plane in the sky so that, you know, everyone stays safe. Drivers are very, very comfortable with that responsibility of being in charge and kind of taking control. They're very ambitious, also very driven.
So what does that mean from a dating perspective? They're going to be the one that's going to tell you where to go to dinner, what movies you're going to see.
Exactly.
They're
going
to, yeah.
Right. Typically, the driver's going to want that amiable or that S personality. And the reason for that is very logical. If you're the D personality and you're going to build this big company and you're going to get a really good job, you basically want someone behind the scenes taking care of things, taking care of the house, taking care of life, raising the children. And again, it doesn't matter who's the male or female or two males, two females, it wouldn't matter. The S personality is going to be the person who wants to be behind the scenes. They don't want to be in the spotlight. They don't need that success. They want to be the person who allows that other person in their life to be successful. So typically they love, they're very family oriented. And so the driver personality can connect with that very amiable S personality. And they think life is great. Now, the S personality actually is initially attracted to the driver because their number one thing is they look for security.
Mm-hmm.
So the S is all about security. So if you think about it, what better way to have security than to marry or connect with someone who is very successful and who just wants to make a lot of money and build successful business and take care of you? So that's the natural attraction there is S wants to be taken care of. D needs someone behind the scenes to take care of details. Where does it go bad? That relationship, if you don't understand the role or if there's not a mutual respect for what each person does, can become an abusive relationship if the driver becomes too controlling and too demanding and the S feels as though whatever they say or whatever they want doesn't really matter. You know, it might be the S person I says, geez, you know, I'd really love to have a ranch. And the driver goes, no, we're not doing that. I don't like it. It's not, it's not practical, and that's not what we're doing.
It's not part of my plan.
Not part of my plan, right. So the driver doesn't really realize that they do that in many cases. They're just so natural with making decisions that they'll firmly make these decisions. Now, if there's a stronger personality, like an I, the I is going to use persuasion to kind of come back with, well, that's fine. I mean, why do you think that? And so what if we did this? So they're the negotiators, number I. So they will actually come back. But sometimes that S is so, they're so about pleasing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that they just won't fight back. But after 20 years or 25 years, then suddenly when all the children are raised, and here's a lot of you will relate to this. The S personality of the family is the most important thing. So the S personality in an abusive relationship, even just emotionally abusive relationship from their standpoint, will not leave the marriage until the children are raised through college and probably even married. But at that point, what they've lived for all those 20, 25 years have now gone off to start their own families. And what you see, which is very common, is that person in their 50s suddenly out of nowhere getting a divorce, and everyone's totally shocked and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're getting a divorce. Like, I always thought they were happy. That's because they don't complain.
Right.
And they lived in a nice house and they lived in a nice world. But the reality is they felt emotionally abused for many years because they didn't lack that ability to just speak up and say, I'm not happy with this. So what I've seen is the, let's say now that we have the S, though, that has a secondary trait of D.
Mm-hmm.
If the S is a secondary trait of D, that's a stronger S personality. And you will see that that person would be a better S for the D person in a relationship than perhaps that double S, you know, like that S personality that's way over to the left.
Right, right.
So they have to be able to, they have to be able to speak up to keep that relationship healthy. And the driver has to, at some point, that D personality has to be able to have someone really usually in their court that says, look, you know what? You need to step it down a bit. And, you know, this is a relationship, so you need to be respectful of what's important to them, too. And when those two things can happen, that relationship stays in balance.
Right.
But if it goes too long out of balance, that's what would happen.
So what about the I personality? Yeah, I was going to say, what about the I personality? The intuitor.
The I personality is very fun, very outgoing. It's also the I and the D are the two assertive traits.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like rules. They don't like boundaries. This is a very free-spirited person. Typically salespeople, waiters, waitresses, people that like, they love working on commissions, things of that nature. They just don't like structure at all. I mean, structure is not a part of their life. So why are they suddenly attracted to this C personality who is structured, cautious, detail-oriented, keeps the same house for, you know, 20 years, drives the same car for 200,000 miles, has the first nickel they ever made. When the I is trading cars every time, you know, they're leasing cars, and every 5 years they have a new car. They have new houses every 5 or 10 years. They never have the money that they've made because they're just having fun with it. What's the attraction there? I think for the I, the attraction is, wow, I need that structure in my life.
I need stability. I need an anchor. I need somebody that, right, you know.
That's right.
And if you think about it, I was just thinking about it. So you're attracted to the fact that you think you need this anchor, this person in your
right.
life, and you're dating that's going to keep you safe and keep you steady and all these
mm-hmm.
things. But eventually that anchor exactly. truly becomes an anchor that's holding you back.
Right. It's more of a noose after a while. It's the anchor first, and it's the noose around the neck.
Right.
And the C doesn't mean to do it, but, for example, the C is very cautious about everything. They're very slow to make any decisions. But the I is the most impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
So if the two people are going to buy houses, cars, or anything, you have one person who's impulsive, like, look, I want it. And the second person's going, well, we don't need to move fast. Let's just wait. Well, what if we lose it? Well, if we lose it, it wasn't meant to be. It is meant to be. I want it. So what happens is you have the impulsiveness with the cautiousness, which I think is the number one conflict that begins to happen in that relationship. The I wants the C to quit being cautious, and the C wants the I to be more cautious. And that's a danger zone for any relationship. When you look at the other party and you're kind of like, why can't you be more like me? Then that right away is the first sign that you're not understanding that relationship. Because the I, C can be a very good relationship because it is good for the I to have that structure and grounding and anchor in their life. But not if they look at it, like you said, as more of a noose. I often tell the I personality, look at it this way. If you know you're going to buy a car next year and you're in a relationship or you're married to a C personality, tell them 1 year in advance that you're going to buy the car because it'll take them a year to do all the research, all the magazines, all the studies, and then they'll give you all the research. Now, you simply take the research, thank them for it, and buy whatever you want. But because that's what you're going to do with the I, you're going to buy what feels good or looks good to you.
Right.
But at least the C feels like they contributed to that decision. You know, even though you might not go along with what they said. Now, sometimes the C gets mad about that. They're like, why did I do the research if you're not going to do what I said? And, you know, but...
Because it feels
right. Right, because it's what I wanted was really typically the answer. And I guess, so if the C understands that, they're like, great, well, you know, at least I was able to contribute to that decision, even though they're going to do what they want. That's the key. When you look at that other person and say, so what value do they bring to our relationship together? And there's a lot of value that C person is going to bring. And the I person is going to keep it fun.
Yeah.
So I think the C actually loves, they always say that they love hanging around with the I personality because it's not even in their DNA to be like that. But there's a part of them that says, I wish I could be like that. I wish I could just walk up to people and talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I didn't worry about the money.
Yeah.
And so the attraction for the opposite, again, is what is it that you think you're missing?
Yeah.
So why is it? So I think, unfortunately, so many relationships, marriages, 50%, I guess, right now, fail. And even a higher percentage of second marriages fail, according to statistics. So that just tells us if we marry the same person or we get back into that relationship with the same personality, it's statistically speaking almost destined to doom again. So you apply what's called predictive behavior into a relationship. And I first did this with a friend of mine.
Before we go there, okay. we haven't talked about the S yet.
Oh, the S. I'm sorry.
We haven't talked about the steadier.
And then we'll, one of the most important personalities here.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about the S, and then I wanted to ask a specific question, too. So let's talk about the S first.
The S personality is, they are the support quadrant within the four. Everything about them is support. They're going to support their family. They're going to support their children. They're going to support spouses. They are, it's the nurse who supports the doctor. It's the flight attendant who supports the pilot. It is the administrative assistant who supports the president. It's the stay-at-home parent who's supporting the spouse that's off working. That's where they get their joy. They get their joy in knowing that they're keeping it all together, that they are important in the equation. By offering that support, they are very dependable, very agreeable. It's the friend that when you're standing around talking about where to have dinner and you ask them, they'll say, you know, I don't really mind, like whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes we press them and we're like, just you pick. They're like, really, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I want you to pick. Well, what's happening is you're making that uncomfortable for them because for that S personality, they really don't care. But if they do have an allergy to something or they don't want something, if they say, you know, I just really don't like seafood, but there's usually something on the menu, so don't worry about it. They look at dining with friends. It's the experience that they enjoy. For them, food is just part of the experience.
Yeah.
But that's why they would rather you be happy with your choice, because for them, it truly doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So when you understand that, you put less pressure on your friends.
But they also avoid, one of the things I tell people when I do my team building sessions using something similar to DISC is that they also tend to avoid conflict. They're relationship oriented and they're indirect. So they truly much,
exactly.
They really avoid conflict. But what happens sometimes to them and can happen in a relationship is, you know, something happens and I tell people, you know, they've got a 10 pound sack and something happens and they put, the D does something that ticks them off, the I does something that ticks them off in a relationship, and they take that little instant and they put it in the bag, and they put it in the bag, and they keep doing this maybe weeks, months, years, 10 years, and they keep putting all this stuff in this 5-pound bag, and pretty soon it's a 25-pound bag, and they blow, goes everywhere, and they bring up things that happened 15, 20 years ago that you're like, I don't even remember that.
Right.
So that's the one thing about that particular type. So I'm thinking of one particular couple that we knew that we're still very good friends with both of them, but they were probably definitely two Ds, I would say. You know, they're both driven, they're both smart, they're both bright, they both got beautiful personalities. All these things that seem to be perfect. They seem like the perfect couple. They had parties at their house. They did travel together. And then we started to notice something kind of strange happening. All of a sudden, she was skiing in Aspen and he was skiing in Tahoe. And they ended up getting divorced. And so what happens when two Ds or two Is or two Ss or two Cs get into a relationship? Is that kind of a bad thing too?
Well, it depends, because my daughter actually is that D personality, married to the D personality, and they both run their own businesses. They're both very entrepreneurial, both very independent, but also that's a very fiery relationship at times, because you have two strong-willed people, and so in areas of conflict, you're going to see more blow-ups maybe occur. Your two I personalities together, you got two happy-go-lucky, fly-by-the-seat-of-their-pants people who aren't least but worried about tomorrow and living for today. So they're going to have a lot of fun. They might get into trouble a little bit down the road when they're thinking about retirement.
Or their taxes are due.
The taxes are due, right? They're not, you know, so, but they're going to have fun. Mm-hmm. But that one, you know, again, is sometimes not the best. What does change, though, is the S and the C. That actually is a really good relationship. The double S, and the S, by the way, primarily teachers are typically, again, taking care of children, educators. So when you have the S personality, in many cases, marrying another teacher, they both think of it, just want to please the other person. They're both going to be respectful. They're both going to be considerate. And they would have children, actually, that are both, all their children would be S's as well, because that's their only role models. That actually can be a very successful relationship. And the S-C relationship, which is, again, both the S and C are very stable, very security-oriented. They don't like to make change. And they both move at a little bit more slower, cautious pace. That relationship can be very successful. And the double C relationship. So why can you double up on the left side, as I call it, the one side of the grid, but not the other? The I and D are risk takers. The I and D are, they're bold. They're not afraid to leave the relationship. They're not afraid to leave the job. So they are more likely, when there's conflict, to leave. But the S and C is more likely to find a way to work it out.
Okay.
And so, yes, they can marry their same behavior trait if that's what they want. And it actually would be more likely to result in success than the I or the D.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is on one of the things that you sent me says, unless you change the criteria that you use for your dating selection or hiring process, but let's stick with dating right now, you will not change the outcome. And as Albert Einstein said, you know, doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity. So,
right.
So tell us about, you know, what is predictive behavior and how could we use it in dating?
So each one of us, if I were to, I could probably take 25 adjectives to describe each of the four personalities. Adjectives meaning things such as, you know, fast, slow, risk taker, considerate, you know, warm, you know, engaging. So you just take all the adjectives that fall into each of these behavior patterns. And if you want to apply logic in your relationship, and I teach, of course, I teach businesses how to apply logic in selecting the right person for the job, because we all have our predictive behavior. Means if I am an I personality, someone can predict that I will be fun, I will be outgoing, I will be talkative, I will be entrepreneurish, I will be motivated, you know, by challenges, because that's who I am. That's not going to change. So that's what's called predictive behavior, is all of those adjectives which describe a person, means that's their predictive behavior. If I can walk up to a total stranger, but if I can identify their behavior pattern, I can actually predict their actions and how they're going to respond or relate in a relationship or even on the job. Now, so if we start there with that predictive behavior, let's say that you've been in a bad relationship. I had a friend who was a doctor, beautiful, intelligent lady. I mean, I still have her friend. And every year at my parties, my summer parties, she would bring basically what I called the same guy, different face to every party.
Yeah.
Same D personality. They just all ended disaster. So one day we were talking, she said, why am I so smart in business and I'm so dumb in my personal life? And I said, well, you're not dumb.
I hear that a lot.
You are picking the... Yeah.
I hear that a lot from women that I work with and coach. I hear that a lot. Why am I so smart and bright in business and I can hire the right people and I can see through the person, but yet my personal life sucks, to just use a clear word.
Right, and that's what it likes. And I hear that from so many women as well. They're like, "What's wrong with me?" You know, and I'm like, "There's nothing wrong with you, but by your nature, early on, you decided that something felt safe to you. There's behavior patterns, and without even knowing anything about behavior patterns, you will be drawn to a person that has those. But what's happening is, for whatever reason, that's really not a long-term match for you. So let's. So I'll have them. I'll say, "I want you to describe the person for me using just adjectives that at this point in your life you think you want to spend the rest of your life with. I want to know everything, like just list as many traits as you want."
So let's walk through that as an example. I mean, I've been married to this same guy for 34 years, and we have we're different, and yet we have some similarities, but personal things we love, like sports and football and that kind of thing. So I'm thinking about some friends that I have, and you know, this is really true. Some friends that I have that are that person that say, I'm a D driver, I'm a DI, and I'm driven in business. I do really well, and I always pick the wrong guy. So what words or adjectives, you know, might I say? Well, I'm looking for somebody that's got, you know, a good personality. They're fun to be with. They're calm. They're consistent. I know where they're coming from. Right? I don't get blindsided by unusual things or unusual things. They're happy. They're family oriented. They've got good values. I mean, those are the kind of things I think you would. What are some of the things you kind of hear back? Like,
sure. And what I was doing as you were talking is I was just basically filling in under the I, S, and C. Every time you said a word, I'm putting it into its spot.
Into one of the quadrants. Right? So if you got four into little boxes, D, I, S, C, right?
Right. And so as it turns out, you mentioned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things. Three of them fell into the S quadrant, but three fell into the I quadrant. Only one fell into the C quadrant. And so, but most people list 20 or 25. In that situation, I might say, okay, so if you were to stop there, I'd say, so the SI personality is a pretty good fit for you. Now, the SI means that it's a passive trait combined with a more assertive trait. So the I is the assertive trait, which allows them to basically maybe that need for having someone in charge of their life might be there, but they also need the fun element. They need a person who's not just going to be too passive. When my test, I do have a test that I use. It has, we take each of the DISC traits, even though I use different terminology, and we break it into four traits showing the primary and secondary trait. Mm-hmm. And what I say is, so really you end up with 16 grids. And I always say for everyone, you should never go further than 2 squares away from where you're at. Meaning that if the driver has 4 traits, a grid with 4 squares in it, if you're on the far right, once you go to the next driver trait over, that's 1, you can only go 1 more over. Mm-hmm. If you go past that point, typically that relationship, that's too strong of a personality, matched up with too passive of a personality. The same thing is with the I and the S. So you never go more than 2 squares away. But it also, really, I just ask each person, what are you looking for in that mate? And it's different for everyone. You basically, if you just apply your logic, and if I don't think I've got enough from them, I'll push them a little bit more and say, okay, well, here you go. So this is what that person looks like. Now, the next step, which is the tricky one, is they're like, well, how do I find that person? I can't walk around and give everyone a test that I meet.
But I can't advertise them for the paper. I'm looking for an ST combination or something, SI.
Yep. Please apply if you're an ST. one of the things I do in my work with companies is that I can look at a person and I can look at their photograph and I can tell their behavior pattern.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, the direct eye contact typically is going to be the D or the I. The person in front of the shy in front of the camera is going to be the S or the C.
Mm-hmm.
A genuine smile is going to be the I or the S.
Right.
The more businesslike look is going to be the logical one. So once we get that trait, then I can go, like, we could just start looking. Let's say my doctor friend said, okay, I'm on Match. Can you tell me who would be a good match? And I said, okay, you tell me everyone you're attracted to, and I'll say yes or no. Well, for the first 10 months, she'd say this one. I go, no, same guy.
No, darn. No.
No, no, no. So then we get to one. I'm like, there's one. And she goes, really? I'm like, yeah. She goes, yeah, actually, he's cute. I'm like, yeah, he's cute. So that's one. And so we picked seven. So I said, these seven have the behavior traits you tell me you're looking in. That was 6 years ago. They have a beautiful relationship. She went out, the very first guy she went out with, that was him.
Okay.
They've been in a beautiful relationship for 6 years. He's perfect. They're both happy. And she's like, oh my gosh. So then all my friends were like, wait, can you do that for me too? Well, sure. It's not that hard. But
that's funny. That's great.
Applying logic and saying, if I just let you choose, you will probably choose the wrong person.
Okay.
But if I force you to go out and meet some people that are a good match for you and you go out them a few times, that relationship should resonate with you if you've been honest about what you're looking for.
That's great. We've only got a couple minutes left. The time has really flown by in this, and this has been a fascinating topic. So I guess a couple of things that people could do, and I want to ask you sort of one question and then how people can get in touch with you. But I guess what people can do is they can go out and you can invest. You can get some for free, and you can obviously contact Judy if you want to have more in-depth, and if you'd like to get some more information, you can obviously do that. But you can also go and just do some research. There's a book from one of the original things was the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, which really goes pretty deep and talks about temperaments, but
right.
It also applies to DISC and all of these, is there's a book called Please Understand Me. And mm-hmm. you could actually read that book. And if you look at the DISC or your instrument that you use, you pretty much can see that it's either somebody's either direct, like you said, the direct eye contact, or they're indirect. And the other
right.
side of the continuum is that they're either task-focused or people-focused. And you can literally
right.
tell someone's behavior and how they think, how they respond, how they make decisions based on those four things. Are they direct or indirect? Are they task or people focused? And then you can
right.
get smart enough at that you can look at somebody's photo, or you can simply look at their office or be around them or their home, and you will pick up clues that's their predictive behavior. And the theory goes
exactly.
back to Plato that those behaviors don't change drastically over time. So in our
right.
last couple minutes, I want to turn a couple two things. So what is your key word of advice for women who really want to kick some glass by dating with logic? And then how do we get in touch with you?
Well, first, I think one of the things that you always have to be cautious of is keep in mind that women, you know, each of the women that you know are listening right now, we do each have our own set of preferences as well. So our natural instinct is to just keep going back to that behavior pattern that maybe hasn't worked out for us. So don't try to justify your choice, meaning that, you know, you suddenly meet someone that you think, okay, well, you know, this probably isn't really who I was looking for, but you know what? I think he's different, and he says, you know, he wants to be different, and so I'm going to justify this because typically, again, that's just going to meet in failure. So be smart enough and strong enough to do your research, figure out what you really want, and just approach it cautiously but logically,
mm-hmm.
You should have a much better chance at a great relationship.
Well, from one hillbilly to another. In fact, I was told it was no longer politically correct to refer to people like you and I as being hillbillies, that we are now called residents of the Appalachians. So,
okay.
With that comment.
But I think when we're both from the same region, we're allowed to use the slang terms.
Yes, yes, but, we are. We are. So how do we get in touch with you, Judy?
So it's Judy LaDure, spelled L-A, capital D as in David, E-U-R. Email address, pretty simple. It's judy@judyladure.com. Website address, judyladure.com or judyladureinternational.com. And under our products page, you can click on there. We do have the behavior test. Basically, it's a click-through site, but for so many of my clients who are looking for that DISC behavior test,
mm-hmm.
when you click it, it'll take you to a site that I love, which is located in Tennessee, Dr. Tony Alessandro. And there's a lot of different tests there.
Yeah,
yeah Tony.
Yeah.
I love Tony.
Yeah, I do too.
And so, from my site, you can click right through to Tony's site.
Yep. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and this is Patty Grimm, and you can find me at pattygrimmatlive.com, PattyGrimm at live.com. My book is on Amazon, Quiet Women Never Change History, Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out. And you can always contact me at my email or my phone number, 425-289-6619, to book me for a conference, a webinar, a speech, a workshop, anything that would help improve your people and get them to their next level. Thanks, and have a kicking day.
Thanks, Patty.
for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grim.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrim@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.